Laudator Jesus Christus. Vatican and World News.
In the headlines this Sunday, the 4th of July, Pope Francis announces a September visit to Hungary and Slovakia. Wildfires rage in Cyprus, killing four people. And the new Secretary General of the Global Communion of Lutheran Churches, the Reverend Anne Burkhardt, speaks to Vatican News. In the Vatican, I'm Lydia O'Kane. But first, in news from the Vatican, this afternoon Pope Francis was taken to the Gemelli Hospital in Rome, where he will undergo a scheduled surgery for a symptomatic diverticular stenosis of the colon. The surgery will be performed by Professor Sergio Alfieri. A new medical bulletin will be issued at the end of the surgery. Meanwhile, Pope Francis is to visit Slovakia and Budapest from the 12th to the 15th of September. The Pope made the announcement during the Angelus in St. Peter's Square, from where he also prayed for the southern African nation of Eswatini. Before the recitation of the Marian prayer, Pope Francis called on everyone to have an open mind, to be amazed at God's surprises, and to see God's humble and hidden presence in daily life. Thaddeus Jones tells us more.
Pope Francis offered his Sunday reflections both before and following the recitation of the Angelus. His thoughts included also an appeal for calm in the southern African nation of Eswatini, where he noted news of unrest and violence being reported. He called on those in authority and aspiring for the future of their country to work together for dialogue, reconciliation, and a peaceful settlement to their differences. Pope Francis also reflected on the Sunday Gospel reading, which recounts when Jesus began to teach in the synagogue of his hometown of Nazareth, and those present questioned how he could have such wisdom coming from a humble family, the son of a carpenter. The reaction was one of disbelief and resentment. This attitude of Jesus' fellow villagers reflected how they thought they knew Jesus, but they did not recognize him, the Pope said. He observed that the difference between knowing and recognizing is something we need to all be aware of, or we risk thinking we know everything about a person when in reality our knowledge is superficial and we need to be open to learning more to recognize the uniqueness of the person.
È un rischio che corriamo tutti. Pensiamo di sapere tanto di una persona.
The Pope warned that if we let the ease of habit take over in us, it can lead to a dictatorship of prejudice, where we close ourselves to novelty and the possibility of being amazed. We see in this in our daily lives when we gravitate toward experiences or people who only conform to our own ideas or worldview, he noted, and this can affect us in our faith life as well, where we think we know everything about Jesus and have it all figured out. The Pope warned, however, that without openness to what is new and to God's surprises, without amazement, faith becomes a tiring litany that slowly dies out. He underscored the importance of allowing ourselves to be amazed, which is the natural reaction to a true encounter with the Lord.
Possiamo dire, in poche parole, che non accettano lo scandalo.
Returning to Mark's Gospel, the Pope said the reason Jesus' fellow villagers did not recognize him was because they didn't accept the scandal of the Incarnation. For them, he noted, it would be scandalous to think that the immensity of God should appear in the smallness of our human condition, that the divine should hide itself in the human, with the words and gestures of an ordinary man and a simple life situation. Pope said we, too, need to be aware of falling into this way of thinking and to learn to see that God incarnated himself, humble, tender, hidden, drawing near to us, living the normality of our daily life. The Pope said Jesus is our companion. He became one of us and therefore understands us, accompanies us, forgives us, and loves us so much.
E sono lieto di annunciare.
Following the Angelus, the Pope announced his visit to Slovakia for a pastoral visit there from September 12th to the 15th. The trip begins first, however, with a visit to the Hungarian capital of Budapest, where he will celebrate the concluding mass of the 52nd International Eucharistic Congress. He expressed his gratitude to all those organizing and preparing this journey, and he offered his prayers for them, inviting everyone to do the same. The director of the Holy See Press Office, Matteo Bruni, also issued a statement following the Angelus, noting the Pope accepted the invitation from the civil authorities and the Episcopal conferences. He'll be in Budapest for the conclusion of the International Eucharistic Congress and then travel to Slovakia, visiting the cities of Bratislava, Prešov, Košice, and Šaštin. The program of the journey will be published very soon.
Well, earlier I spoke to our Eastern Europe correspondent, Stefan Boss, who's based in Budapest, and I began by asking him what the reaction has been there and in Slovakia to the Pope's announcement.
I certainly think that the people in Slovakia are, of course, very happy. I think an important role in his decision also played that, of course, Slovakia is very much Catholic, even more Catholic than Hungary. I would say about 6 out of 10 Slovaks identify themselves with the Catholic Church. In Hungary, that is a little bit lower. 3 out of 10 Hungarians identify themselves with the Catholic Church. But in both countries, the Catholic Church is still the largest denomination. And I think for the Pope to go to this region, to Slovakia, as well as to Hungary, of course, where he will begin his trip, is also seen as an encouragement to the faithful after what was really a huge pandemic for both nations as well. Hungary at one point was among the nations which had the highest reported death toll for any nation almost in the world, as you talk about the coronavirus pandemic. They have now recorded about 30,000 deaths on a population of less than 10 million. So it's quite a number. And also it is seen as an encouragement at a time when Hungary, for instance, is trying to get out of economic difficulties as well. And I think for Hungary and Slovakia, of course, it's also seen as a revival for the church. Both nations have in the past suffered under decades of communist rule. And I think that's an important message as well. I think to stay the course also in this new era of these countries, they're now members of the European Union. And of course, there's the temptation of materialism and so on, and also new influences. But I think the Pope wants to send the message also to young people to stay the course and to keep the faith.
We all know, Stefan, that the congresses and events like the Eucharistic Congress, they take a massive amount of work. So I wanted to ask you, how are the preparations going for an event like this?
Yes, it is my understanding that it takes at least about 4 years to organize such a huge event. You can imagine they expect perhaps even tens of thousands of pilgrims, many from around the world. So it's quite an operation. I do know they are going to set up all kind of information points in Budapest, the Hungarian capital, for this huge Eucharistic Congress. And of course, then there is also the closing mass held at Budapest's majestic Hero Square, not far from where I live, actually. And I can tell you that they are expecting, of course, thousands of people there. And it's also very interesting because this will be the first time that the Pope will be attending the International Eucharistic Congress in 20 years.
Exhausted Cypriot firefighters have battled for a second day to try and contain massive blazes raging on the island, which have claimed 4 lives. Nathan Morley reports from Nicosia.
The fire started on Saturday near Arakapas, northeast of the port town of Limassol, where the flames quickly engulfed several properties and led to an evacuation. Fed by gale force winds, the blaze expanded and roared through parched scrubland by late Saturday evening, threatening more villages in the foothills of the Troodos Mountains. As dawn broke on Sunday, civilian volunteers joined firefighting teams to combat the flames, assisted by water-dropping aircraft from Israel, Greece and Britain's Royal Air Force. Early Sunday, the charred remains of 4 Egyptian farm workers were found in a mountainous area outside the village of Odos, close to where the first blaze erupted. Speaking to journalists, the Minister of the Interior, Nikos Nouris, said the island was experiencing the most devastating fire since the establishment of the Republic of Cyprus in 1960. He said both in material damage and in the cost of human life. Although fires here char hundreds of acres every year, Karalambos Alexandrou, the director of the Department of Forests, said that this blaze was the worst in the history of the country. Emergency services have fought several fires in the past few days as temperatures reached over 40 degrees Celsius on the island. Meanwhile, the president of Cyprus, Nikos Anastasiades, has been touring some of the affected communities and said that the fire was the biggest tragedy to hit Cyprus since 1974. For Vatican Radio, this is Nathan Morley in Nicosia.
At least 31 people were killed on Sunday when a Philippines Air Force plane carrying troops crashed on landing in the south of the country and broke up in flames. The transport aircraft crashed at Patikul in Sulu province in the far south, where the army has been fighting a long war against Islamist militants from the Abu Sayyaf and other factions. Dozens of people were pulled alive from the wreckage and taken to hospital. And finally, last month, the Council of the Lutheran World Federation elected Estonian pastor Anne Burhart as General Secretary of the Global Communion of Lutheran Churches. She will assume the position of new Secretary General in early November. The pastor succeeds the Reverend Dr. Martin Hung, who has led the communion of 148 churches for the past 11 years. In an interview with Vatican Radio, the Reverend Burhart spoke of the progress made in relations between the Catholic Church and Lutheran World Federation.
I would say that if we think back in time, and if we think, for instance, at times before Vatican II, then I think it has been an immense progress in Lutheran Roman Catholic relations. I think we have really done quite some journey from conflict to communion. And although, of course, there is still deep yearning, particularly in congregations by singular persons in churches locally for an official joint Eucharist, which hasn't so far still been possible to establish officially. I think despite this fact, there has a lot of progress been done in mutual relations. And I think now we just need to continue on this journey and to continue to discuss the still dividing issues that relate to ecclesiology or understanding of church and ministry. But at the same time, we of course may not forget the pastoral concerns that relate to concrete persons, to concrete people living in different churches locally, and particularly in the cases of mixed marriages. It is of course still very difficult to know that one is not officially always approved to participate mutually in Holy Communion.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Vatican and World News. For more on these and other stories, be sure to check out our web portal at www.vaticannews.va. You can also catch the latest updates on our Facebook page or on Twitter. Many thanks goes to Vincenzo Proto in the studio in the Vatican. Thank you for joining us.